Welcome to The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis. I am your host, Cicely Davis.
Hello and hooray, America. Welcome back to The Savage Truth. You know my name, Cicely Davis here, and I'm so very excited and enthused this week for yet another episode here from my space. Just a little change of stimulus, change of location, change of scenery. But rest assured, the Savage Truth will be told and remains the continued goal and theme for this podcast. If this is your first time watching or listening, thank you and welcome. And for all of you new and returning, welcome to the new space. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And let's get at it. You know, I feel a little different this week speaking in a different spot. It's nice, and I feel a little bit more relaxed. I feel a little bit more natural. I like this. Okay, let me see what's going on here. I mean, there's so much going on. There's always something going. It seems like there's something going on every hour, every minute, and it's hard to choose and bring forward every headline or ridiculous story I get between recording time. So in the last episode, I spoke extensively on the Wade and Wallace shame out of Fulton County, Georgia. Seriously, I have to believe that this whole kangaroo court lover scandal and outright legal embarrassment has got to have Fulton County hanging their heads in shame for what has come out of this case. I mean, typically, people think of DAs as a state's best, a highest standard of law and order and rule of law. In particular, this one is supposed to be pressing former President Trump on some pretty heavy charges. You know that his wealth and his reputation, he's going to be represented by the best of the best in with legal representation. So it goes to assumption and common sense that anyone who dare bring anything forth as far as litigation goes will be sharp. They'll be clever, savvy, extremely well-versed and talented in the way of law, rule of law, and litigation and reputation and highly integrous people. You would think that, but again, as I said in the episode prior to the last one even, not so much. We get Wade, an inexperienced trial attorney, having been rumored, according to many, as being mediocre at best, and Fannie Willis, a hot-headed, emotionally out-of-control gangster of a DA who testifies on the witness stand in Ebonics, a DA, a person who is well-versed and educated in court proceedings and depositions, filing notions, appropriate and usual court protocol, testifies in hostility and anger and Ebonics. And this is supposedly the best out of Fulton County. Tisk, tisk, tisk. Well, the judge heard the closing arguments at the end of last week with some extensive questioning for both sides, but I thought more so for the Wade and Willis defense. So this was, of course, last Friday, as both sides gave their final arguments before Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee, who will rule whether the DA and her special prosecutor and lover, Nathan Wade, should be removed from their Trump election interference criminal case. Willis and Wade admitted to a clandestine affair after they were outed in January, but they testified the relationship became official in 2022 after they brought the case. But witnesses, including Willis, former BFF and employee, and Wade's ex-law partner, said they knew of the attorneys, both of them, being intimate as early as 2019. Whether Willis and her entire office will be removed from prosecution could well hinge on if Judge Scott McAfee finds their proof that their relationship began before the time they admitted to being lovers. I think we've all witnessed the blunders on the witness stand, particularly from Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade's ex-law partner. And perhaps after this testimony blunder, ex-friend Terrence Bradley, I mean, he was a mess on the stand. He admitted to lying about his friends, perhaps even a high-stakes court hearing, speculating about the Wade and Willis relationship. After it was revealed that he confirmed the relationship to Ashley Merchant, one of the defense attorneys for Trump, in a text message answering the word absolutely to a question Merchant inquired about the relationship. In that text message, Bradley seemingly admitted the Wade Willis affair having started before 2022, contradicting what they said in testimony. Now, I'm going to move on from this story because we're all in waiting for Judge Scott McAfee to give his ruling. The judge said he would need about 2 weeks. But really quick, confirm with me on my thinking on this. Confirm this with me, everyone. Bradley said he was merely speculating about the relationship he sent through text message to Merchant. But he answers Merchant's question about the relationship with the word absolutely. Absolutely is not a speculative word. Would you agree? Absolutely is a definitive word. It's precise. It's solid. It's confirming. It's an affirmative word, unlike words like maybe, perhaps, possibly. Am I right on that? Am I thinking right on that? Do you agree with me? I don't think I'm alone on that, but we have to leave it to the judge. But I think it's clear for this case. Remove them. Remove this case altogether. And let's get on with the real political contest between Trump and Biden and release all of this politicization. Okay, now, if you're a queasy or squeamish person, you may not want to hear this next story, but out of Oklahoma, kids were sucking toes and licking feet. Yes, you heard me, sucking toes and licking feet in school. I swear, you can't make this stuff up, truly. Okay, so Oklahoma authorities are investigating a local high school after footage from a fundraiser event appeared to show students sucking and licking one another's toes last week. The footage from Deer Creek High School in Edmond, Oklahoma, shocked and disgusted, well, me just hearing it, and I'm sure you, they shocked and disgusted social media users across the country this weekend. Oklahoma State Superintendent Ryan Walters soon announced an investigation into the incident, calling it disgusting, truly. The footage originally obtained by Fox 25 was taken during a week-long fundraiser for a local coffee shop that employs people with special needs. Students from 9th through 12th grade volunteered to take part in various class competitions that students paid to attend, according to that outlet. The video shows student volunteers who were paired up, one sitting on chairs while the others laid down below them and licked peanut butter off their toes. "This is disgusting," said Walters in a statement on Friday. "We are cleaning up this filth in Oklahoma schools. Our agency is investigating," and I'm quoting him, "outrage librarian libs of TikTok soon shared the footage on social media, demanding to know who approved the outlet. The account mistakenly claimed that the students were paired up with the adults in the activity, however. Reactions to the incident rolled in, with Senator Ted Cruz of Texas declaring, "This is child abuse." Walters then replied to Cruz's statement saying on X, "Completely agree. We are stopping this in Oklahoma." Now, I'm admittedly unshocked by much, okay? Having been a candidate for Minnesota and Minneapolis, you know, ground zero for defund the police, the George Floyd riots opposing Ilhan Omar and the squad as well, with drag queen story hours across the country and kid drag queen shows, again, I'm hard to shock. But this one got me. Every adult in the room should be ashamed of themselves. There should be arrests made from this. And then listen, this was a monetized function. This was a fundraiser. The Oklahoma Department of Education put out a statement apologizing, saying they failed. Meanwhile, the school celebrated the success of the fundraiser in a public statement. And I quote, "This afternoon, Deer Creek High School announced a grand total of $152,800.38 raised for Not Your Average Joe Coffee, an organization created to inspire our community by including students and adults with intellectual, developmental, and physical disabilities." On Thursday, February 29, 2024, Deer Creek High School hosted an assembly called the Clash for Classes for students who paid to attend. During this assembly, 9th through 12th grade students volunteer to participate in various student organized class competitions in the spirit of raising money for NYAJ. All participants in the assembly were students who signed up for the games they played ahead of time. No Deer Creek faculty or staff participated in any of the games during this Clash of Classes assembly. Many dedicated students gave generously of their personal time to achieve this momentous accomplishment, which will serve communities beyond the boundaries of Deer Creek. We would like to thank all of the patrons, businesses, and sponsors who contributed to the success of this year's wonderful week of fundraising. If that is not a sign that we are lost as a society in America, nothing does or nothing will convince you. Can we please, let's just move on from this story. Well, I guess she's all smiles as she takes her first victory. Nikki Haley wins DC. Voting in the primary ran over 3 days at the Madison Hotel in downtown DC, just steps away from the heart of DC's lobbying hub, and Haley herself held a campaign rally there on Friday. She won with nearly 63% of the vote. That's no surprise. It was very predicted. This, of course, came after she was crushed by Trump in caucuses in Missouri and Idaho and at a Republican convention in Michigan on Saturday. Trump is cruising to the GOP nomination and is favored to win primaries across 16 Super Tuesday states this week. But the GOP electorate in D.C., where Republicans make up just 5% of registered voters, is hardly representative of the base found in most other parts of the country. Now, this has to be said. That's a valid point. It's really significant, and it's important because the majority of Republican constituency has decided that Trump is, without a doubt, the nominee in spite of Haley and her donors' wishes. This will not change. So still, we wonder, what is she doing and why? I mean, I would go so far as to say that Republicans of DC are not just moderate. I would actually describe them as magenta, right? More reddish purple, if you get my meaning. Not at all a true reflection of the party. But you know, hey, we all have to allow her to have her joy as she presses on to further crush them down the road. Trump has already said that his team is in general election mode, meaning they are focused on Joe Biden. They're not looking backwards. They're not focused on Nikki Haley, and rightfully so. I think that's very smart and strategic. The American people is what he's focused on. He's focused on the American people and getting our country back on track to reflect its true glory. So if she and her camp want to cheer, rah, rah, shiskumba, okay, that's fine. Let them. It means nothing in the total grand scheme of things. It's Trump, and that's that. Now, did you hear that the woke state of Oregon has decided to take an about-face on its position on overdoses? This is unbelievable. This happens all the time. Remember back in 2020 and forward, Oregon was a leader in the Defund the Police movement. They celebrated homelessness, and although there were fires and fights and mayhem during reports, they always held on to there's peaceful protests in the streets here in Oregon. Well, now, they are taking a U-turn, so to speak. Here's what this is about. Oregon lawmakers have voted to recriminalize certain drugs after a surge in overdose deaths resulted in the governor declaring a state of emergency for Portland's fentanyl crisis, all but ending a flagship liberal policy. So in 2020, a measure to decriminalize small amounts of all drugs and redirect much of the state's marijuana tax revenue to fund grants for addiction services was passed into law under ballot measure 110, with 58% of Oregon residents approving the measure. Can you guess the results of such a measure? Can you guess what kind of outcome there would be if you decided to take money to fund the safe houses and dope packs to those who are addicted? Can you guess the outcome of decriminalizing drug possession? Well, if you can't, I'll do it for you. Since then, addiction and overdose death have skyrocketed in Oregon and nationwide as fentanyl swept across the country. I mean, that's just as predictable as Trump becoming the Republican nominee, truly. In August 2023, 56% of Oregon citizens said they disapproved of the pioneering drug law, and both Republicans and Democrats introduced legislation to roll back the controversial measure. A bill recriminalizing the possession of small amounts of drugs was passed by the state Senate 21-8 on Friday after the House passed it 51-7 last Thursday. The bill now heads to the desk of Governor Tina Kotek, who said in January that she's open to signing a bill that would roll back decriminalization, as reported by Oregon Public Broadcasting. So Kotek, who is the mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler, and Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Pearson last month declared a 90-day state of emergency for downtown Portland over the public health and public safety crisis, which is fueled by fentanyl. And I quote, "With this bill, we are doubling down on our commitment to make sure Oregon citizens have access to the treatment and care that they need." This was, again, quoting Democrat Senate Majority Leader Kate Lieber of Portland, one of the bill's authors, adding that its passage would be the start of real and transformative change for our justice system. And all I have to say to all of this is, duh. I mean, if you decriminalize drug possession and drug use, you're going to have a surge in addicts and drug addiction. Okay. So, I don't know if you all pick up on this, but this is how these nutty far left woke and yes, even crazy Democrats who side with them address these noxious issues, like allowing homeless to sleep, roam, do drugs, and pee and poop in the streets. See, here's how it goes. First, they say, no, that's not happening. That is not happening. No one is sleeping or roaming or committing crimes or doing drugs or peeing and pooping on the streets. You're just a MAGA racist, a misogynist, a homophobe, a xenophobe, et cetera, all the other phobes they can assign. Next step is they say, once the statistics reflect enough and the cameras show enough times, they will then say, well, we have policies and we have that under control and we have legislation in place to control it. It's being exaggerated by the right-wing media. Most people are happy, and we have legislation to address the small problem. And then finally, after enough people have died, or in this case, is revealed by all media and hurting the Biden administration's chances for re-election, I mean, DeSantis and Newsom discussed this in a debate, so they can't ignore this any longer. They reverse their 2020 post-George Floyd position of summer of love approach and get back to common sense. I mean, listen to this. Portland private security guard Michael Bach told Fox News last month that fentanyl overdose doses rose 533% in Multnomah County, the state's most populous county, between 2018 and 2022. Dealers act with absolute punity, he said, and they hand out drugs like it's 7-Eleven. They're doing it in the schools. They're doing it in the parking lots. He says they're doing it in the playgrounds. They're doing it at churches and in front of businesses. They're doing it in broad daylight, and there is nothing stopping it. End of quote. Bach said the cheap cost of fentanyl at 25 cents a pill has caused a devastating impact on those in this community. Actually, all across this country in our inner cities. Oh, the great David Horowitz has been saying this since the 1980s. He said it before Obama. You know, the election has consequences. Mr. Horowitz was more stated that you get what you vote for. In other words, and he said this, the state of our country is because of us. You see, he's trying to get us to understand that we voted in the squad. We, the people, voted in Obama. We, the people, voted those who don't actually know or respect the Constitution. We voted in a man as president who was a liar then and remains corrupt and an incognitive corrupt president now. Savage truth is, totalitarian policies always makes things worse. It weakens us as a nation, as a society, and it's only us, the people, who can turn this thing around. Liberty, free market capitalism, and just punishment for real crimes like shoplifting, vandalism, rape, and murder is the best solution to protect and preserve the Constitution and the American people. And I think we saw that with this 9-0 ruling from the Supreme Court of the United States, which brings me to the final focus of the episode and definitely the most significant. The Supreme Court puts Trump back on the ballot, another devastating blow to the Biden administration, which was already on the struggle bus, if you ask me, already having serious trouble breathing. A unanimous decision, 9-0, the Supreme Court ruled you cannot strip number 45 from the ballot. And we watch the left-wing media have an absolute nervous breakdown about this. But what everyone needs to understand and know, and I just want to throw this little tidbit in because they're going so crazy on the left in the media, what the role of SCOTUS is. The role of SCOTUS is to interpret law and set precedent for future cases, not to send out rule to make us happy or to appeal to our feelings. Donald Trump will remain on the ballot in Colorado in November, as well as any and all other states with the same hopes and efforts. The statement, one of many from the Supreme Court, was this, and I quote, "States have no power under the Constitution to disqualify a candidate from federal office, especially the presidency." Amy Coney Barrett added, "Particularly in the circumstances, writing on the court should turn the national temperature down, not up." Donald Trump called the decision unifying and inspirational, and I agree with him. He challenged Joe Biden to discontinue politicization, to stop his prosecutors from the frivolous cases, and to take the contest to the ballot box where it belongs. And I quote the former president from the press conference. "President Biden, number one, stop weaponization. Fight your fight yourself. Don't use prosecutors and judges to go after your opponent to try and damage your opponent so you can win an election. Our country is much bigger than that." Well said, number 45, hope to be number 47. Now, I still must remind you and others, and you should do the same, the former president was never charged or convicted of insurrection. That's important to remember and to keep in top of mind, as they like to say. Now, this was an obvious low to the plans on the left, as the lefty wing media has been dishonestly selling the case as a slam dunk. They were raising hopes for Democrat voters that Biden could win again from the basement because Trump would have been off the ballot in every blue state. It's a complete interruption to their plans. Now, this great socialist media minds of cable TV didn't see this coming, this ruling, and they fed their audience what they wanted to hear, false hope, resulting eventually in disappointment. CNN reported that it was unfortunate that SCOTUS followed the Constitution. Imagine that. They actually said that. One anchor saying, and listen carefully to this, folks, listen to the language coming from CNN. This is the far left thinking. It's clear. "Unfortunately for America, the court isn't necessarily wrong, but this is the way the framers wanted it to be." And I'm going to say, fortunately for America, the framers wanted freedom of the press. And the press and the media, the Secretary of Colorado realized that collectively Americans would have to vote to save America, to save democracy. Imagine that the people actually have to choose who they want to be president. But Democrats will have to persuade voters and not 9 judges. And they admitted this with a heavy heart. I quote the Secretary of State of Colorado, Gina Griswold. "My large reaction is disappointment to SCOTUS ballot ruling. I do believe that states should be able, under our Constitution, to bar oath-breaking insurrectionists. Ultimately, this decision leaves open the door for Congress to act to pass authorizing legislation. But we know that Congress is nearly a non-functional body. So ultimately, it will be up to the American voters to save our democracy in November. Now, in that last sentiment, the secretary actually told the savage truth. Now, again, we've been saying this all along, but this is exactly what they have been trying to deter, taking the power away from the people, and we say no. This is an admittance that they don't actually believe in democracy. They say they actually fight so hard for. Sunny Hostin of The View, with her racist self, pretended she was all for this decision and fully expected it to go this way, even though from the past shows, particularly when Chris Christie visited, she is quoted for saying, there is a constitution and there is a precedence and there he needs to be taken out. So yet another U-turn from a socialist. Keith Olbermann, the now podcaster but former sports and political commentator, said this on X. The Supreme Court has betrayed democracy. Its members, including Jackson and Kagan and Sotomayor, have proved themselves inept at reading comprehension. And collectively, the court has shown itself to be a corrupt and illegitimate and must be dissolved. The nine justices can't read, so dissolve it, says Olbermann. Someone on X actually responded to Olbermann to cry more, and he wrote back, those aren't tears, fascists. It's urine, and I'm sure you would enjoy being bathed in it. How crass. Democrats are now claiming that now is the time to officially start freaking out. Here's something interesting in the latest New York Times poll. Trump is up by 5 points, 43% to 48%. In that same national poll, 10% of Americans who voted for Biden in 2020 now say they're switching their vote to Trump. That means over 8 million Biden voters have become Trump voters, which would give Trump the popular vote. God, I like hearing that. The first time a Republican has done that in 20 years. Joe Biden's approval rating sinking even lower to just 36%, and around 3/4 of the country agree he is too old to be an effective leader. Rightfully, President Trump is taking advantage, picking up large amounts of support from women, from Hispanics, Blacks, young Americans, and basically everyone, with the exception of college professors and women with pink, purple, yellow, blue, and green hair. Democrats are in bad shape. I think we can make that a savage truth. They can't process how horrible of a president Joe Biden is and the toll he's taking on their party, and more importantly, the country. And they're laughing out in uncoordinated fashion and justifying and making excuses for his performance. If you can actually call it that. On MSNBC, we hear a tirade. Need I remind you that one of the greatest presidents in the history of the country was in a wheelchair, said one anchor on MSNBC. In other words, you don't need to be able to walk in order to do a good job, referring to Biden's instability with regards to his mobility. But I remind them, Franklin D. Roosevelt had an average of 63% approval rating. So they went from Biden is FDR because he accomplished a lot to he's FDR because neither of them could walk. The Biden campaign says they will continue to bring the image of January 6th as their political play. Doesn't seem to be working, but it's their campaign, not mine. So as we've come to expect, Biden isn't going to run on politics. He's going to run on January 6th. Lawfare failed. And that is a savage truth this week. So here are my closing remarks, because I could truly talk to you to death this week about these issues. Here's some takeaways from the SCOTUS decision. I think this is really important to point out. Three Democrat justices stood with their colleagues and said, enough. They stood with their colleagues, spoke with one voice. We should take some solace and encouragement from that. This 9-0 unanimous decision is encouraging. And Amy Coney Barrett, again, I'm going to quote her again here. The unanimous outcome is really what Americans should take from this. The court has settled a politically charged issue in the volatile season of a presidential election, particularly in this circumstance. Writing on the court should turn the temperature down, not up. All nine justices agree on the outcomes of this case. This is the message Americans should take home. And here's my comments on that. The most important takeaway is that there was only one voice we heard from SCOTUS this week, and that was a voice, I think, that spoke for a lot of Americans saying that this is not what we're about, that this was an anti-democratic effort to remove a candidate off a ballot, thereby preventing the people, preventing voters from casting their votes, but also preventing this tit-for-tat processing in state. And I remind you proudly that this is the oldest and most successful democracy, this constitutional republic in the world. And at this late date, we actually had people trying to destroy and interrupt that into something that would be detrimental and destabilizing. And our highest court stood and spoke against it, all nine of them. Perhaps there was a little disagreement as to how far the opinion had to go, but on the actual Colorado decision, the court spoke as one voice. Maine and Illinois to follow suit and drop this nonsense and allow the people to decide with pending state cases in California, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, and Wisconsin. Trump has not been charged, tried, or convicted of insurrection, and the court decided accordingly, preventing an untenable situation. If we do our jobs this coming November, we can begin to get an alignment of our American societal order. Now, once you get this, it'll be past Super Tuesday. And so we have a few states, and if you voted, I want to thank you ahead of time in Alabama and Alaska, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, and Virginia. President Trump was brilliant and unifying in his press conference. He was poised and he was grateful. He took on a very general election tone. He could have taken a victory lap and would have been justified in doing so. Instead, he chose to speak to the Supreme Court by thanking them for their decision to uphold the Constitution, and he challenged Joe Biden to close the border, not relying on Congress to do so. On 60 Minutes, I don't know if you all saw that, the former border control agent said he never actually spoke or had one conversation with Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. Not one. Trump spoke most importantly and predominantly to us, the American people, what our futures look like, to be unified and to get back to being the greatest nation on the globe. So there's hope as I depart this week on a high note. Let's take this feeling to November and keep in mind what's at stake here. Listen, the primary is over. Trump will be the nominee, and it's time to unify. Hope is yet alive, and it's up to us. And that is the Savage Truth. Thank you for joining me in our new space. I will invite you again for sure. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, as always, be bold, be strong, be faithful, be true. Till next time, I'm Cicely.
The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis is a production of Front Page Magazine and the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.